barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Tuesday, October 4th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host Chris Drew. As always, got a fine Tuesday talking about the national landscape of college football. We're going to talk of Ole Miss after beating a vaunted Kentucky Wildcat team. And then UCLA beats Washington. Michael Penix Jr. leads the country in passing yards, but Chip Kelly was having none of that shit. DTR in the building. The landscape is I'm not going to say it's clearing up, but we're learning a little bit about some of these teams that as possible contenders, and that UCLA USC matchup could become a massive, massive matchup, which is great for college football, great for the rivalry, and ultimately great for the Big Ten as both those teams are coming. So you love to see Chip Kelly leveling up the Bruins, and obviously Lincoln Riley's got USC cooking. We're also going to have a couple conversations. One, and here's my question, we're going to get to in a minute. If all the college coaches, after the Ryan Day, Greg Schiano thing, I was getting all kinds of questions. Who would win in a fight? And it's just funny because especially Buckeye fans, they associate being a good head coach or a good football coach with being able to fight. And it's like Lou Holtz won a shitload of games. He's not beating up anybody. Like there's no relation between winning football games and being like winning in a fight. But it started a conversation with a good friend of mine this morning on who would win, if the Big Ten coaches all fought, who would win a battle royale? Who's coming out of that fight? And I want to talk about it. I want to talk about the national landscape too. Who is the baddest coach in the country? Who's winning that fight ultimately? Because you have a lot of guys like Nick Saban's like 98 years old. He ain't winning the fight, right? He can coach, but he ain't fighting. So we're going to talk about that. But first, Chris, before we get there, I saw this on social media, and I want to talk about it. Because if the 12-team playoff was in place right now and the season ended today, this is what the bracket would look like. You'd have Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma State all getting a bye, presumably, right? Winning their conferences, et cetera. And then you'd have some play-in games. You'd have Tennessee going to the Coliseum to play USC and Lincoln Riley. The winner of that game would then travel to the Peach Bowl in Atlanta to play Clemson. You'd have Ole Miss traveling in December to Ann Arbor, Michigan, freezing their nuts off to battle Michigan at home. And the winner, Michigan, would probably play Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. You talk about ratings central. And Coastal Carolina needs to get the fuck out of there. They have no business playing Georgia. And this is assuming Alabama beats Georgia. Then Georgia would roll through Oklahoma State and then meet up with Alabama in the Final Four. Kansas Penn State is just sacrificial lamb to Alabama when they get there. I'd imagine Penn State will win that game as we get to contender pretender. But what are your thoughts, Chris? This looks pretty sweet.
Oh, I would love Tennessee USC. Like that would be all offense, no defense, dynamic quarterback play, two super brilliant minds. Like that's a really intriguing matchup that I hadn't given much thought into to this point. Penn State Kansas would be a funny one. I'm still not used to, you know, mentioning Kansas and playoffs in the same sentence. Ole Miss Michigan. I would love to see Michigan in the first round of the playoffs. If you're Ohio State, I mean this would do absolute numbers. And I was telling you kind of off air, I wasn't in on a 12-team playoff until this year because. Yeah. I thought there was too big of a gap between 4 and 5 or even 3 and 4. But now with the transfer portal, with the NIL stuff, I think that gap is shrinking, which is why everyone this year, no one's looked super elite this year. No. So that would be
Like all those games would be good with the exception of Coastal Carolina. That would be an absolute bloodbath. But the other games, that's good football. I mean, who doesn't want that, right? And you're going to crown a truer champion now, right? Because that fifth place team's not left out. I thought 12 was excessive, but it's, I don't know. I'm fucking here for that. I'm here to watch those games.
especially how tight we just watched Missouri play Georgia. I'm convinced that anybody can beat anybody. And additionally, like more room for like office shenanigans, like, you know, tournament bracket challenges. I'm in for it. So I'm excited for the 12-team playoff once we get there.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be awesome. And I am finally on board. I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be good for college football. I did also want to mention, if you see below me, there is a purple ribbon. That is because it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and being, you know, having the storylines about me, I thought it was probably appropriate to throw the ribbon on there and discuss it, because there's true victims to domestic violence everywhere. And I think, you know, we all as a society need to keep an eye on that and keep an eye out for people, and you know, don't let things pass, because there's some real shit going on out there. And I don't know what charity, I mean, I tried to raise money for domestic violence awareness to get Brenda Tracy on the show. She didn't bite, so I refunded everyone's donations. But I just think that this is a real issue, and as much of an issue as it is for actual victims of domestic violence, it is not equally, but it is also an issue for false accusations, because not only is that, you know, there is a victim in that crime, and that is the accused, right, in a falsely accused situation, but also the whole narrative, not narrative, the whole action drive, right? The whole trying to end domestic violence and impact domestic violence in a positive way, those false accusations, they fuck it up. I mean, they shit on actual victims of domestic violence. I think both of those things are things we need to talk about and put out there, because this hashtag MeToo movement is bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. It is all social and justice warriors. Social justice warriors trying to, I don't know, make money, make a name, like Brenda Tracy's of the world. Like, she got gang raped allegedly, and now she's going to make a shitload of money to go talk to people about not gang raping people. Like, no shit, Brenda. We fucking know you shouldn't gang rape people. Like, and that message needs to be driven, but we don't need to pay you for it. You don't need to make money off of this. These people that make money, just they make me sick, honestly. And then women that not only women, but the oppressed, right, that empower this and weaponize these movements to their own personal gain and falsely. It's just, it's fucked up.
No, I agree. Zach, I am ready to chat a little bit, and then in a little bit, I do, when we do contender and pretender, I do want to throw that graphic back up there to see like what teams you would drop out of there and who you would put in.
Yeah,
because I think that is definitely worth the discussion, and that'll be a really good one. But moving forward, Zach, I wanted to start off by asking you about what you thought about SMU. So SMU, they've now had some players, because they cannot enter the transfer portal, kind of inform the team and the coaching staff they will not be playing at the remainder of this season, in order to preserve their red shirt, and then they'll enter the portal at the end of the year.
Well, that's exactly what I said was going to happen, right? Back when the news came out, the NCAA is asking people to remove themselves from the portal. I was like, well, these kids are going to quit the team. I mean, they're going to quit the team to save their red shirt as opposed to entering the portal. I don't know the difference. I mean, ultimately, if you're in the portal, I guess you can communicate with schools. So all they did was fuck the kids over that want to transfer, right? Because they have to quit the team, stay on campus and see all their former teammates. But on top of that, they can't even start the process of figuring out where their new home is going to be. So this is all the NCAA's incompetence coming back once again to backfire. And it's unfortunate for the kids, honestly, because for X amount of months now, you've let players just jump in the portal, transfer, do whatever they wanted. And these kids thought that they had that right and that ability. And so they decided to do it. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, time out. Yeah. We're going to rethink some things. Just remove yourself. We'll let you know. It's like, what? Just the dumbest shit ever. But yeah, it's unfortunately what it's going to come to, because these kids don't want to burn a year. If they want to transfer, they don't want to burn a year. So they want to keep that redshirt year. So they're going to have to just quit the team, up and quit the team. That's what they're going to do.
And now they're going to be vilified. Because, like, you know what the national media is going to say, like, you know, you quit, you gave up, dot of this, dot of that, when they're trying to look out for their own careers, and taking that red shirt now and, you know, having a chance to prove themselves elsewhere is something that they thought would be afforded to them, and now it is not. So it is going to be really tricky for SMU kind of moving forward, especially with a first-time head coach. But I want to cover some of the games, Zach, that we did not cover yesterday.
No, we're starting with Battle Royale, Chris.
Oh,
we're
Battle Royale.
It's fucking right there on your list. First thing, Battle Royale. Follow your list.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, I want to go conference by conference. And we're not going to do them all. But I'm curious, in the chat, we're going to go first Big Ten's up. 14 coaches enter a room. Just start beating the shit out of each other. One coach is going to walk out. Who's it going to be? Buckeye fans are going to maybe claim Ryan Day. He's not coming out of there. So here's my top two. I think the last two men standing, because you look, Tom Allen's getting his ass beat. Paul Christ is, I know he got fired, so maybe he's not even there, but if he was there, I'm not going to throw interims in there. Jim Leonard might actually win it, but Paul Christ is his fat ass is getting worn out. Jim Harbaugh's too goofy. No way he could fight. I mean, I don't think he could fuck or fight, just, you know, watching him in press conferences and being around him. James Franklin's the first guy to get knocked out. Second guy to get knocked out. Kirk Friend's a little too old, kind of a tough guy. I'll buy that he survives for a while. PJ Fleck is the first guy getting knocked out. I mean, I don't know who it is. Someone that probably in the West, you know, maybe a Jeff Brom. Somebody's going to walk up and just knock his fucking lights out. No doubt about it. Jeff Brom's not lasting. Mike Loxley might be the third man standing. I think Shiano lasts a while. And then if Scott Frost is in this, I think he's, you know, his ego's hurt. I think he might hang around for a while. Fat Bert Bielema he's going to be so exhausted. I mean, it'll be like rope-a-dope. No one's going to fight him. Just make him dance around for 30 minutes, and then he'll be so fucking exhausted. He'll probably just pass out. He'll lose without getting punched. But my final two standing is Mel Tucker and Pat Fitzgerald. Chris, I'm curious who you have coming out of there.
Well, I had those two as well, and I did throw Mickey Joseph in as third just because he's an interim head coach right now. I think he'd be able to last. But I agree with my guy, Andrew. I got Pat Fitzgerald winning. I mean, that's where I'm at.
I can see it. I honestly think Pat Fitzgerald lasts in the next conversation we have, which is the National Battle Royale. I think he lasts a while, but I got to go with Mel Tucker. I mean, Mel Tucker's just got that swagger. You could tell he probably whoop a motherfucker's ass. Like, you could just see it. Like, I'm not messing with him. So, and I want you to also, here's going to be the next question after we go through two more conferences, is if they had an Anchorman fight, right, where all the news stations showed up and they're fighting together, if the conferences came out, met behind a building in a back alley and had a full-blown conference-on-conference fight, what conference is walking away? Because I hate to bring it to you. I don't think it's the Big Ten.
If it was an Anchorman fight?
So then you go to the SEC. Who's winning the SEC Battle Royale? So you first got to ding a couple guys because they're old. Like Nick Saban ain't winning a fight. I mean, he probably is going to somehow get his agent to get him out of the fight, right? So Nick Saban's not winning it. Kirby, he's too fat. I'm not buying that he can fight. Brian Kelly might be. He's the second knocked out, possibly. I mean, Brian Kelly, you know, can't fuck or fight. No chance. I mean, he's a missionary guy his whole life. Jimbo Fisher is all bark, no bite. He's definitely not coming out of this thing. Mark Stoops, too fat. I like his fire. I think he lasts a while. I could definitely see Mark Stoops hanging around. Lane Kiffin is the one that I think he's tall. He's in decent shape, much better shape than he was at Alabama post-divorce when he kind of got fat. I think Lane Kiffin hangs around for a while. I think he's in the Final Four. Sam Pittman is the one. He's old, he's sloppy, but he's just a tough guy.
So, I feel like he could take several punches. I feel like he's got an iron jaw.
Mike Leach is the outlier here. Like, what crafty way is Mike Leach going to find his way into the Final Four? Like, he certainly doesn't have the body for it or the athleticism, but that's a crafty fucker now. He's like the world's most interesting football coach. Billy Napier's around for the long haul. I mean, he's in shape. I got Billy Napier
winning it.
Kind of square jaw. I think I might have him coming out of this. Heupel's too fat. It ain't happening.
Don't do my guy Heupel like that.
I mean, he is. He just is. Eli Drinkwitz. Here's what's going to happen, though. The SEC coaches are going to walk in, and they're going to say, Saban's going to run it. He's going to go, all right, hey, timeout. Before we get started, let's just get one thing out of the way. Shane Beamer. Eli Drinkwitz, you two fight first so we can watch these two fucking nerdy clowns battle it out for entertainment. Like, if we're going to do this, let's at least get some entertainment out of it. Shane Beamer's getting knocked out first, Drinkwitz second, and the dark horse here is Brian Harsin, young, in shape, banging secretaries.
Yeah, like, we know got he a little can shit fight to him. Fuck. That's right.
He's got a little shit to him, and then the guy I don't know anything about is Clark Lee. From Vanderbilt. I always forget about Vanderbilt. He looks like he might have a chance, but I think I got Napier coming out of the SEC. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I got Billy winning easy, man.
Easy.
Yeah, I think Billy wins easy.
Interesting. Now here, and we don't have to go through every single coach in the Big 12, but my final two in the Big 12, and I think this is like a national fight. I'm talking UFC pay-per-view, lots of money. Dave Aranda versus Brent Venables to take the Big 12.
If it's a clean fight, no substances, I got Dave winning it.
All right. Dave beating Brent Venables. That's crazy because Brent Venables would be all coked up and fucking,
Oh, I said, that's why I said clean.
Oh, you got to drug test him before the fight?
Yeah.
It's a battle royale, Chris. Ain't no fucking drug test.
Yeah, I got
I'm BD. Taking, I might take Dave Miranda, though. That's for sure. Then you go over to the Pac-12. I just would love to see Jed Fish get punched in the face. He's just a huge pussy. Dan Lanning's got a shot in the Pac-12. Obviously, Lincoln Riley's got a shot. David Shaw seems like he could hold his own. Chip Kelly's getting his ass whooped, but I think Kyle Whittingham's just a fucking grown man. Yeah, I don't think anybody's leaving that room unless Kyle Whittingham says they can. And then the final one, Chris, my dark horse, the news station, the anchorman fight, conferences show up, they're going to fight. I think the ACC just wipes the landscape. I mean, there's not a fat guy on this list. Like, you have Mac Brown, who's a little older, but I know Dabo's a pussy. You could tell that, but at least he's in shape. But Dave Clawson, Mario Cristobal, Dave Doran, Pat Narduzzi, a little older, Jeff Hafley, Scott Satterfield, Mike Norvell probably can fight. Dino, I bet he can fight a little bit. Jeff Collins got fired, but he's a scrappy dude. Then you got Tony Elliott, like Brent Pry, bunch of young dudes that are kind of in shape. I think the ACC beats the shit out of every conference.
I think Mario wins the whole thing. I got
Mario wins the whole thing.
Yeah. I got Mario as my champion.
Why?
You know, the whole CIA thing, you know, the whole going through some Secret Service training, military background. I got Mario winning the whole thing.
I think Mario's in the final too, but maybe I'm overstating Mel Tucker's swagger, but I think I got Mel Tucker winning the battle royale in the national landscape. But I'm curious in the chat though, who's winning? Who's walking away? Who's the baddest motherfucker that's a head coach in Power Five football?
Urban would have won it.
Urban would not. He would have never. But Harbaugh probably beat Urban's ass. You're crazy.
Oh, I will not let you get away with that. That is not acceptable.
He probably would.
No, wouldn't take it. Wouldn't take it. I want to super chat up here. Trey, thanks for the two. Saints tank for CJ Stroud. They love Buckeyes. That'd be a perfect fit for him.
That would be a good fit for him. I'm so low on CJ Stroud right now after that game Saturday. I mean, I broke down the film. Chris, I got to send it to you. I broke down the film on Patreon if you're interested. Money back guarantee. It's $20 a month to get all the coaches' film breakdowns. And I'm just telling you, I've never been so disappointed in his play ever. I mean, to the point where the general group chat was asking me, would I take Justin Fields or CJ Stroud? I was like, I'd take Justin Fields, Dwayne Haskins. I mean, CJ's the lowest of actual NFL prospects I've seen from Ohio State. And I know that I'm being dramatic because he didn't play well Saturday. And I know he's going to bounce back. The minute I say things publicly, players all of a sudden like, transform themselves and start playing better. But I'm really down on CJ right now.
Do you think that kind of the media tour he's been on since the end of last year, it reminds me of like when boxers get the belts and they go on these media tours and they kind of lose almost a little bit of focus and they spend more time on the road than they do actually working on things. Do you think that has kind of gotten to him and do you expect that to get to more young men?
I mean, it could have, but a lot of the things he's doing now, he did at the beginning of last year. And I don't know that he ever fixed them. I think they just kind of started asking him to do different, you know, different things. Like there was two for sure touchdowns that he flat turned down because he was going to have to step up and step into a throw and get hit. And he flat turned him down, scrambled away, incomplete pass. It was bad. I mean, he missed Marvin Harrison Jr. on a deep crosser that was a sure touchdown, all because he just flicks his wrist. He doesn't step into throws, partly because he doesn't like to be in the pocket. And I don't want to call him a pussy, but boy, he looked like one on Saturday. And it just is what it is. Fuck it. I mean, the kid has all the talent and all the potential in the world, but it's
like tapping into that next level. Like, can you?
And here's the thing. I'm fully aware of what I'm saying right now publicly on a pretty big platform, because they have Michigan State this weekend and then a bye week. So he's certainly going to light up Michigan State's awful secondary, go into a bye week, come back healthy finally, because he's probably injured again, some shoulder injury that no one has disclosed or talked about until everyone realizes he's not playing well. And then he'll probably just blossom and flourish and become this great quarterback. And that's what I want. So it'll be a good thing to see. But I'm really down on him. And if you want to see why, it was an hour and 5 minute long video breaking down every single play on offense. And it just is what it is.
That was one of the more legendary Super Chat answers you've ever given, Zach.
Well, they just caught me in a sensitive moment.
Yeah, well, good job. Are you ready to move on to the next topic?
I'm ready to move on, Chris.
Do you want to read a sponsorship before we get there?
So I do want to mention Manscaped is one of our new partners, right? With promo code Menace, you get 20% off and free shipping. I'm telling you, they sent me a package of all of their stuff. It's I mean, high end stuff. The lawnmower 4.0, the what is it? The nose hair clippers. I forget what they call it. The hedge trimmers, clippers.
Yeah, hedge trimmers. Yeah, something
whatever
like
it is. It's fucking the nicest one I've ever seen or owned. They're all rechargeable batteries. I mean, it's really nice shit. And I'm it's another directive to the Menace Army. Your partners will appreciate a little bit of self-care and manscaping to get that done. I promise you, it'll enhance everything. And you know, if you trim the bushes, the tree looks bigger. So just trim that shit down. Go to Manscaped. Use the promo code 20% off, free shipping. I promise you, you will not regret it. Go do it. Lock it in right now.
Alabama versus Arkansas. I want to touch on it real quick because we didn't really get to talk about it yesterday, Zach. Obviously, this was a weird game. You know, Bama won, controlled most of the game. There was that weird 8-minute stint where Arkansas went on a little comeback. Bryce Young has the shoulder injury. Takeaways from this game, do you think that, you know, this is still solidified the number one overall team? Or where are you at with this game in particular? And did this go kind of how you thought it could go based on a couple of elements?
I mean, it's exactly what I thought would happen, right? I Arkansas last year was a different team from this year, and I didn't think they were capable of pulling off the upset in this game. Now, I thought they had a chance when Bryce Young went out, although Bryce was not playing great. He had an interception, one touchdown. He was only completing like 50% of his passes. He wasn't pushing the ball downfield. The receivers didn't play great again. And I mean, how they won this game was that Jalen Milroe kid is a freak of nature and took off and ran for whatever, 91 yards. One of them was that 77-yard run that was absolutely ridiculous.
On 30 and 20.
Jahmyr Gibbs went over 200 yards. He had that 74-yard touchdown, 76-yard touchdown. He was explosive. He was ridiculous. He is their one weapon on offense. And their defense, I thought, played well. Arkansas, I thought KJ Jefferson was just okay. Throwing for 155 yards is not exactly what you're looking for to upset Alabama. So it wasn't the right team to upset Bama. I think Tennessee is that team that has that chance. And then obviously Georgia, if they play or when they play in the SEC championship game, unless Tennessee beats Georgia. I think Tennessee's the most equipped to do it. I think A&M might be able to sneak something. As bad as A&M is, they're still talented. And I'm not calling that. I think Bama will actually boat race A&M because of last year. But if you're talking about potential upset alerts, the other team to watch out for is the LSU Tigers, because they're sneakily getting back into this mix after the 1-point loss in week one to Florida State. Everyone just discounted them, and they're slowly but surely getting a little bit better.
Heard.
And I mean, I also, just while we're on the topic, I got no fucking time for this. Kayshon Boutte is the wide receiver one. It's just the most absurd shit ever. The kid has 97 yards receiving through five games. Like, and I know he only played in four of them. He was dinged up, but I mean, three catches on eight targets, Mississippi State, two catches on six targets, Florida State. He has four drops already on the year. Like, just cancel that fucking conversation right now.
throw the whole beat away. Zach, I do want to move ahead a little bit and talk about Clemson. They took care of business. We didn't really mention them yesterday. They beat NC State. I thought they looked good. Any thoughts on them moving forward? Do you think they're one of the four best teams in the country?
Not yet. I think their defense was impressive in that game. To a point. And I think DJ Uiagalelei is an improved version of himself. I still don't think he's living up to the hype. I still think he should transfer. I mean, he completed 70% of his passes, only threw for a little bit over 200 yards. He was 0-for-3 on deep balls. So like, I'm not going to change my tune much at all, but I do think Clemson is trending in the right direction.
I think they probably have a case for to be the number three team in the country, given their resume and kind of game control. I thought they kind of looked really good against NC State the entire way through.
I mean, the defense did, right? NC State couldn't run the ball in that defense. They averaged 1.6 yards per carry, but Clemson couldn't run the fucking ball either. And DJ was just above average. It wasn't like exceptional. I mean, they were just okay. 6-of-14 on third down, not even 50%. Like, it wasn't. It wasn't impressive enough to me. Now, they beat a good NC State team, I'll give you that. Devin Leary was just okay, threw a bad interception. I mean, threw for over 200 yards. It wasn't a convincing win for me. Even though they won by 10 and beat a really good NC State team, I didn't see it. I didn't see this contender classification yet.
Gotcha. They did enough for me, just kind of shutting down the run without Brian Brzee in the middle there. I was impressed with Clemson, and I just think DJ's so like unreasonably talented. It's not even fair, and I'm just happy that he has been unlocked. Additionally, one of the other games this weekend that we didn't really touch on, Ole Miss, man, they caught a top 10 win over Kentucky. They could be a contender. They are probably, if they take care of business, they could end up being 10-0 going into Bama. Jackson Dart, Lane Kiffin. It's weird. They get it done.
Well, it's one. I think Ole Miss is another potential upset just because of the Saban Kiffin, you know, background. Mm-hmm. And also, I like Jackson Dart. I think Will Levis is overrated. That was proven on Saturday. I mean, he completed a decent amount of balls, but he was 0 for 3 on deep balls, which is really ultimately killed him. And then he lost the game single-handedly at the end. I mean, they hurry to the line. He doesn't make sure everyone's set. This is part of playing quarterback now. You can't just drop back and throw pretty balls. You have to run an offense. You have to fucking drive the ship. And he drove that bitch right into the iceberg, just like the Titanic. They hurry to the fucking line. The slot receiver's not set yet. He doesn't make double check to make sure they're set. Throws a fade for a touchdown to win the game, but gets called back because he fucked it up. And then the very next play, he holds onto the ball for 5.5 seconds and gets strip sacked. Like, he lost the fucking game. He did. So we're going to put to bed the fucking Will Levis number one overall pick bullshit. He threw for 220 yards and just, he was just unimpressive to me.
Yeah, no, I could definitely hear that. If I would have told you this before the season, as to me, Kansas is going to be better than Texas A&M. They keep winning. They get it right.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And here's the thing about Kansas. Let's not overstate what they are, right? They're doing a good job. They're winning some games that we don't think they should win. And people are talking about Jalen Daniels, and I like the kid as a player, mm-hmm. but in that game, I mean, they won by 3 over Iowa State. Like, let's not act like they really got a huge win. Like, that was a pitiful win. That was a gross win. And this kid completed 1 for 4 deep balls, 2 of 6 balls over 10 yards. Like, he's not lighting the world on fire. Sometimes a team like Kansas wins some games they shouldn't, and everyone wants to anoint their quarterback as some, oh, he's the difference. He's going to be a great quarterback. He'll probably be an NFL player. Jalen Daniels, this. It's like, relax. He's doing a good job, but Kansas is an absolute pretender. So I'm not even going to say I think A&M will probably beat them.
Ooh, okay. I'm here for it. I do want to ask you a quick question. What is more likely this weekend, A&M beating Bama or Auburn beating Georgia?
I mean, neither.
Oh, I just, you know.
I mean, the way Georgia's looked, Auburn obviously has the best chance to win in those two scenarios. I mean, what are we talking about? Missouri should have won. And Auburn's a better team than Missouri. They proved that on the field. So Auburn has the better chance. I don't see it happening, but Auburn has the better chance of winning.
Got you. That was just my one little question. Now I have the AP poll in front of me, Zach, and I kind of want to talk about it a little bit just because it is going to matter, because once we get to the committee point, I know that they say the AP poll doesn't matter, but when they use their data and metric, one of the things they use is the AP poll and ranked wins and this and that. So I think it's worth a discussion every single week. A couple of teams that I want to know, do you think they're ranked too high or too low? Mm-hmm. And then kind of talk about if they could be a contender or not. I want to start off with good old Kansas. Is being the ranked 19th team in the country, is that too low for them, or is that right where they should be?
No, I mean, they're the second lowest rated undefeated team, right? Syracuse is at 22 as an undefeated team, and rightfully so, right? Beating Wagner 59-0, like, woo, go Dino. They're the second worst undefeated team. That's exactly where they should be, right about top 20. You know, it'd be nice if they can rattle off a couple more wins and stay in the top 25 as a 2-3 loss team at the end of the year. And they probably will be a 2-loss team, and they deserve to be a top 25 team, but they're not better than that just because they're 5-0. I mean, there's you look at some of these teams like NC State, I mean, Wake, I don't know about BYU, but Oregon, Utah, some of these 1-loss teams are certainly better teams than Kansas.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say their next 3 games, Zach, TCU, Oklahoma, Baylor.
I mean, they're going to lose 2 of those 3 games. Listen, I'm telling you right now.
Don't steal it. That's my next question. TCU, they're 4-0. They have significant team speed. They're ranked number 17 in the country. Proper place for them or not?
Yeah, they got to prove it. I mean, I think that's a good place for them. 17. I mean, they're behind. I mean, listen, who's in front of them? BYU, Wake, NC State. I think they beat all 3 of those teams. You could elevate their ranking a little bit, but it doesn't matter. Just win, right? And I mentioned the stat. I talked to my guy at TCU again this morning. I mentioned that stat. 11 players ran over 21 miles an hour in the game Saturday. Only 10 NFL players have logged that this season. Like, they are fast. Like, mm-hmm. They have Texas speed all over the field. And we'll do a deeper dive into TCU as they keep winning, because that type of team speed, that's impactful. You talk about fast on defense, fast on special teams, like just fast. And that matters a lot. Speed kills.
That does make them dangerous, in my opinion. Their next three games, Kansas, Oklahoma State, and then Kansas State, 5-0, 4-0, 4-1, three decent teams.
Well, three of the best in the Big 12 for sure. Mm-hmm. That Oklahoma State game, I think, is going to be the biggest one. I think it's going to be an eye opener yeah. against Kansas. I think they beat Kansas handedly, and really that they shoot up the rankings for beating an undefeated Kansas team. And then that Oklahoma State game is going to be massive. I mean, that is going to be game of the week.
And then I have no clue how good Kansas State is, Zach, because they throttled Missouri, and Missouri outplayed Georgia.
It's college football. You can't do that, weird. Right?
Yeah, you're right. No transitive property in college football because it's the best.
There's just not. I mean, you look at App State and some of these teams that you know, Miami loses to Middle Tennessee State. Middle Tennessee State falls apart. Like you just, it's every Saturday's different, and you really can't do that transitive property stuff.
I want to talk about the number 18 team in the country now, Zach, real quick, because they're dangerous. UCLA, they moved to 5-0 after beating Washington, who a lot of us thought maybe could challenge for the Pac-12. And Chip Kelly has DTR playing well, and I like DTR.
He's not playing well, playing fucking ridiculous. He might be the best quarterback in L.A. Listen to me when I say that. He might be the best quarterback in L.A. That Washington team was a good football team, and this kid went out and was 6-for-8 on any throw over 10 yards, 75%. You look at all of his analytics. I mean, he didn't struggle against the blitz. He didn't elevate like great quarterbacks should, but he was good under pressure. Against base defense, he completed adjusted completion percentage, 95% against base defense for three touchdowns, 315 yards total. I mean, he played lights out. And when you look at Caleb Williams is a better athlete, but he's not putting up better numbers.
Do you think he's the better athlete? Because DTR leads
they're
linebacker.
They're very similar quarterbacks. And I'm not taking anything away from Caleb Williams. I think Caleb Williams is playing outstanding. I mean, he also was, I think he was 10 of 15 on throws over 10 yards. So 67%, still exceptional, right? In their win over Arizona State. Arizona State's a lesser team than Washington was. And he did well against the blitz. So he is hitting all those analytics that I look for. I'm just saying, Dorian, DTR belongs in the conversation too, based on five games, based on the body of work he has. And so you talk about a matchup. I'm excited to watch DTR duel it out with Caleb Williams. I think it's going to be an exceptional matchup. And on Tate Martell's former backup, by the way.
Yeah, Tate Martell's former backup, committed to UCLA before ever at Bishop Gorman. He's reportedly 6'1 now. So right around that same height as Caleb Williams too. We saw the vertical. He leaped over a linebacker, hurdled one, which is an absolute ridiculous thing to do. Like, he looks the part. Zach, their next three games are really interesting because you're going to learn real quick, or at least I am, if they're a contender or not. Utah, Oregon, Stanford. What do you think the record is those next three?
Utah, Oregon, Stanford. I mean, I think you're going to – Utah, Oregon, it's going to – two tough ones. I think they beat Stanford. I don't think that's as relevant a game.
Yeah, that one's not the tough
one. But those two games right there, that's a tough two-game stretch. And here's the thing about it. Like, Caleb Williams, I think my opinion probably is Caleb Williams is slightly better than DTR, but UCLA has a much better defense than USC. They just do. I mean, four missed tackles in that game against a better Washington team. USC had 10 missed tackles against Arizona State, who's awful. I'm not sending USC and buying UCLA. I'm just trying to state the case that UCLA is on par with USC. They don't have the skill at receiver. That's about the only difference, but they're right there.
What is a better pair? Oklahoma, Texas, or USC, UCLA?
I'll take USC, UCLA.
Okay.
I know the brands are probably bigger with Oklahoma, Texas. I believe in Sark. I don't believe in Brent Venables. I think Oklahoma, I've said it before the year, the Oklahoma is a pretender program. And I don't believe that Brent Venables, he's shown me nothing that makes me believe he's going to elevate that program or even keep it at the same level. I think Sark will. So with what Chip Kelly's doing this year, the success they're having, if they can finish this year out and have a great year, I think UCLA gets a lot of momentum with NIL deals, being in LA. I mean, they're not in the absolute ghetto of LA either. There's beautiful palm trees, campuses. USC is right in the fucking hood. So UCLA, if they can level up a little bit, I like the collective two teams better than I like Oklahoma, Texas.
Heard. Okay, Zach, next up, I got a grouping of teams I want to know who you think should be ranked higher and why. Pretender. I'm going to start with the first one, Penn State. They're 5-0. They had a sloppy win. But
in
the pouring rain,
but they,
in the monsoon, correct?
Yeah.
So I like them moving forward. Now I have a question about them on Factor Cap, but where are you with them? And then the team ahead of them, Ole Miss being at number 9.
I mean, listen, I think Penn State's right where they should be. I mean, they have to go beat somebody to elevate into, I mean, what are they at? 10? They're a top 10 team. You got to go beat someone to elevate up and prove that you're not the typical Penn State, right? Ole Miss just had a good win against a good Kentucky team. Penn State, I mean, they don't have that significant win yet. And there's only really two opportunities, right? Ohio State and Michigan are the only two where they're going to get a win that'll vaunt them way up the leaderboard per se, or someone's going to fuck it up and lose. They haven't done anything to elevate themselves, right? And so I don't think they're a pretender, but they just got to prove it before they can level up into that next, you know, hemisphere of college football teams.
How big is it that they get a bye week before they get Michigan?
I mean, I think it's massive. When you get healthy, you have 2 weeks to work on a game plan. It's a huge advantage. I don't think they're going to beat Michigan, but it definitely makes things more interesting.
Okay. Now I want to talk about the other team, the number 9 team now in the country, Ole Miss. They notched a top 10 win. They are currently ranked number 9. Do you think they should be ranked ahead of Penn State? Is that fair? Should they be ranked higher than Oklahoma State? Where are you? Are they contending or pretending, or is that the perfect spot for them in the ranking?
I think Oklahoma State should be 9, Ole Miss 8, and Tennessee 7, just based on what I've seen so far. And I'm just not a Spencer Sanders believer. I'm just not in Oklahoma State. And I mean, I guess to the same point, I'm not a Sean Clifford believer. But I think, you know, Penn State or Ole Miss they beat Will Levis in Kentucky. I like what Lane Kiffin has going on. I think their defense is a pretty good defense. So I think they're probably a spot low. I would put them and Tennessee ahead of Oklahoma State and kind of knock mainly quarterback play. I like those two quarterbacks better than I like Spencer Sanders and Sean Clifford. And that's honestly the difference for me.
Okay. That is fair. Ole Miss's next three games are against Vandy, Auburn, and then at LSU, which
that's going to be the one to watch at LSU, right? In Death Valley, I think they win those other two games, no problem. They go at LSU, and if LSU can upset Tennessee, that's a massive game, massive game. And if LSU loses to Tennessee, it'll still matter when it comes to the SEC West race, but that race is going to go through Tuscaloosa regardless, right? Yeah. They just, even if they drop one of these games coming up, if they can beat Alabama with one loss each and it's not a three-way tie, they go to Atlanta. You think about that.
Zach, can we throw up that 12-team playoff on the screen real quick just for the sake of this part of the conversation? Thank you. Now, a lot of these say, you know, at large and auto bids, and these are 12 teams, but these are not currently the top 12 ranked teams. Zach, do you think the 12-team playoff should have auto bids, or should it be the top 12? Or does there
I think it should be the top 12, because if Oklahoma State comes out of the Big 12 with two losses and wins it, that's bullshit. They get a bye. That's fucking stupid. They're going to get a bye over a Georgia or a Michigan or you know, some one loss team that lost to a top five team. Oklahoma State will lose to, you know, TCU or someone like that. So I think that the auto bids for the byes are fucking stupid, because it should be the best four teams. Who are the best four teams? They get a pass. They get a bye. They get to play one less game. Just because you're in a shitbag conference doesn't mean you should get a bye. Same with Clemson. Unless they're undefeated, fuck winning the ACC. I don't give a shit. You don't get a bye for just because you won your conference, because Clemson wouldn't win the SEC, wouldn't win the Big Ten. So why should they get a bye when Michigan doesn't if they don't win the Big Ten? I think it's just I think it's asinine to give just auto bid buys. I think they should, if you win the conference, you should automatically get in, but your seeding should entirely be based on, you know, where the committee sees your value or sees how good you actually are.
Right. And the at large leaves too much up for kind of debate, I would say, because I do not think even in a 12 team playoff, Kansas, which is on this list right here, would deserve a spot if they did not win the Big 12. Like I just don't see it, because they're outside the top 20 now, but second best team in the Big 12.
There's a lot of projection here. So they're projecting Big 12 champs. TCU will be better than Kansas. Like TCU should be in that slot right there.
No, I generally agree. Should being an undefeated team auto bid you, like if a team like Notre Dame, because they don't have a conference championship, or should they have to join a conference to be considered in this kind of thing?
No, I mean, Notre Dame being 12-0, that will, I mean, they'll get in no matter what. You call it an auto bid or whatever. If they were undefeated, they would get in, and it doesn't matter. And then, like I said, in my opinion, the conference champions, the only reason they would do this, make conference champions get an auto bid, is to, you know, reward teams that are in conferences. Basically say, fuck you, Notre Dame. If you ever want to buy, you're going to have to join a conference. That's the only reason they would do it.
I think the tricky thing about that is, like, what if a team like last year's Pitt wins the conference?
And that's my point. You should not get a fucking bye.
Yeah. Or like if Northwestern stuns somebody and they're like the 8-4 Big Ten champs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that should.
They belong in the playoffs, make them the 12 seed, and they don't get a bye because they didn't earn a bye during the year. Just because they won the conference, that doesn't mean you earned a bye.
Okay. No, I do agree. Zach, I have Dorian DTR stats compared to Caleb Williams, and I'm going to upset a lot of people on Twitter a little bit later. Just,
I love
just,
it.
Just get ready for that.
Hey, let's do it on TikTok too.
Yeah, no, we'll do it everywhere. Are you ready to say it? The DTR is a better quarterback than Caleb Williams?
No. I didn't say that, and I'm not going to say that, but he's right there in the conversation.
Okay. No, I hear you. All right, Zach, I have some factor cap for you, and then I want to hit super chats and kind of have some general conversation. You ready?
Yep.
I prepared these statements. Some of them are from Twitter. Some of them are just, from my own back pocket. And you got to tell me factor cap and why. I'm going to start off with a guy that's kind of a hot button topic right now, given the fact that his numbers are very comparable to a running back like Bijan Robinson's. I'm not going to compare him to him for you. But for this one, factor cap, Mayan Williams is a top five running back of the nation.
I will say fact, but he's probably he's in the second half of that. I mean, if you look at Power Five running backs, Jahmyr Gibbs leads all Power Five running backs at 8.8 yards per carry. And, you know, there's a couple like Utah. Cameron Rising is a solid back. He's not better than Mayan, but I think I'll say fact, but he's in the bottom part of that list because he doesn't have the home run speed. And again, not to keep referencing it, but this game film is invaluable to watch. And I'm telling you this as a fan now, right? As an analyst / fan, when you watch the TV copy, you don't get to see some of the glaring things that jump off the screen. Like CJ Stroud played horrible Saturday. You wouldn't really know it because you can't tell. Are the receivers open? Is there like what happened? Did the protection break down? You don't know until you run it back on coach's film. And so when I broke down that offensive film, Mayan Williams made some great runs. Obviously, tied to school record, 5 touchdowns, all that shit. That was mainly because they couldn't throw it, right? And the run game, the O-line was so dominant. But he missed some plays. You're like, damn, if he had another step or two, if he had another gear, that's a house call. And so that's what's going to hold him back from being an NFL star and or being like the top back in college football.
I agree, and it is kind of tricky. Mayan Williams at 5, just because of there's so many good backs. I mean, I would assume that he's like the best in the Big Ten, which we've kind of discussed at great length. I think Gibbs, if you go just based on traits, like Bijan would be in there. Tank from Auburn, obviously, is a really good back. Deuce Vaughn 4, and then 5, you're going to have a little bit of a discussion there. So it is an interesting topic. Factor cap. Final answer is fact. So hey, I'm there with you. Next one. Penn State is the second best team in the Big Ten. Factor cap.
Cap. Okay. Michigan's the second best team. Or, we'll see how good they are at the end of the year. But I think Michigan and Ohio State are the best two teams in the Big Ten. Penn State's third. And then Maryland, I think, is that fourth team.
Factor cap. Bryce Young has regressed this year compared to last year.
Cap. Bryce Young has not regressed. His receiving core regressed. I mean, he had 2 NFL receivers out there last year. This year, he has a bunch of dog shit. And there's talent, and they've improved since we broke down the Texas game. But this Alabama receiver corps, I mean, he had fucking Jameson Williams, the best receiver in college football last year. John Mechie was the best possession receiver in college football last year. Arguably, maybe JSN was, but John Mechie was in the conversation, right? He lost both of those kids, and he's replaced it with guys that just aren't fucking dudes, honestly. They aren't developed. They aren't well coached. They don't show up. They don't perform. Bryce Young is as good as his chess pieces. And right now he had a major downgrade in chess pieces. So he's not performing as well, but he hasn't regressed personally.
Heard. Factor cap. Tennessee is this year what Ohio State was last year.
Absolutely. Fucking cap. I mean, just totally different dynamics, but Hendon Hooker's a fucking dude. And I'm not saying CJ wasn't a good quarterback, but Hendon Hooker will fucking run. He'll fucking do anything he can to get a first down, like competitive as shit. He reminds me more of Bryce Young than he does CJ Stroud. So I think Tennessee's defense still has some question marks. I think their receiving core is not as good as Ohio State's was last year, but it's good. So I think it's very different team dynamic than last year's Ohio State team.
Factor cap, Georgia will finish the regular season undefeated.
I'm going to say Cap. I think Tennessee beats Georgia this year.
There we go. I wanted you to say it. That's what I should have done to get you there. Factor Cap. Last year's Michigan team is better than this year's Michigan team, even fact, with J.J. McCarthy.
Fact 800 times over again. And I think this is a good Michigan team. I don't, they're not as, last year's defense was really fucking good. Like, really good. And they lost some great players, and they didn't replace them with great players. They replaced them with good players. So they went from a great defense to a good defense. So they're not as good as last year. It doesn't mean they can't beat Ohio State. It doesn't mean that they aren't a good team. They're a step down from last year's team.
Urban Meyer will be the next head coach of Texas A&M, Factor Cap.
I'm calling fact. I called it from the onset before Jimbo. I mean, he keeps losing, and I'm telling you, he's a couple losses away from them looking at that buyout like, fuck it, it's worth it. Like, fire that thing. I mean, look, he's got Alabama this weekend, right? At Alabama, so that's an L. Now he's 3-3. At South Carolina is a win. Ole Miss is probably an L. Now he's what, 2-2 in the SEC. Florida at home at Auburn. I bet he drops one of those. Now he's still 500, and then I think he loses to LSU at home. I think he might finish below 500 in the SEC and get fired. And when he does, A&M, it's the overreaction offseason. A&M will fire him, and it'll be like, what do we need to pay Urban to come there? And I saw in the comments, Shelly won't move to College Station. Yes, she will. She loves anything out west. And I know it's not fully out west, but it's warm. It's, so, you know, they got some landscape. Like, she would move to College Station if the money's right.
Heard. Okay, here's the last one. Hendon Hooker is a top three quarterback in college football.
I mean, Cap, but he's pushing, and he's living on RPOs and not hitting deep balls right now. If he was not doing those two things, I would put him in the top three in college football. But I, you know, there's Sam Hartman, I think, is playing better than him. Caleb Williams, DTR, CJ, maybe not, but we'll give CJ a pass because of his full body of work that he's playing better than Hendon Hooker. Bryce Young, I mean, I get it. He doesn't have the receivers, but he's still playing. He's a better quarterback than Hendon Hooker. I think Hendon Hooker's better than Will Levis. We can mark that one down. He's better than Sean Clifford. He's
okay, you're not saying shit. I mean, the sun comes up in the morning. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, he's in that conversation. He's right on the fringe of mm-hmm. being in that conversation. He's just not there yet.
Okay, yeah, no, I hear you. I disagree. I think he is the third best quarterback in college football this year. You know, if I had to. But Zach, I'm ready to hit some super chats and get on out of here.
Let's do it.
Cool. Z, your unfiltered opinion of Coach Jason Brown.
I love Coach JB. He's unfiltered. He's real. Though, and I don't have a problem with him at all. I think everything he does is great. The only thing that is funny is every quarterback, everyone sucks. Mm-hmm. Every TikTok of his is talking about how everyone sucks. He never is just like, this is big time play right here. Look at this shit. Ever. Everything's like, this slapdick fucking stinks. And I'm here for it. I love it.
It's so entertaining.
It's entertaining. It's his brand. But I did, I went on a show every Monday, Menace Monday. I went on yesterday and I pushed back on it because he was flat wrong on the clip on CJ Stroud. If you guys saw the clip, he was talking about CJ missed a sight on a hot because the linebacker blitzed. He's fucking wrong. The linebacker blitzed. It was six-man pass pro. The running back went to pick it up and flat missed the fucking block. And that's why CJ was under pressure. He was not hot. He should not have thrown a sight adjust. And so I had to call him out on it. I was like, listen, I don't give a fuck what you say about other people. But you're not going to come at my guy, Justin Fields. Did I say CJ Stroud? I meant Justin Fields. Yeah. Justin Fields. I was like, you're not going to come at him because he was wrong. It was actually a four-man pressure. They have four D linemen. They brought the middle linebacker, dropped the D end, and it should have been picked up. And CJ should have been able to take a full drop and execute whatever concept they were running. And he didn't have time because the running back just fucking missed. So, but I really love JB. I love his takes, but it is funny how every kid sucks. And sometimes he gets excited to say a kid sucks before he actually like pays attention. He's like, oh wait, no, that's not what happened.
When we're talking about which coach would win in a battle royale. I'm 100% here for it. Thank you, David, for the two. But instead of shooting us two and not you know, asking a question, go sign up for the Patreon. We have lots of exclusive content there, recruiting content, Mind of the Menace, film breakdowns. I mean, it's really kind of a one-stop shop for every really serious college football team. Fan, excuse me. Tyler, thank you for the five. Zach, preseason, you said Michigan was going to be a really tough game for Ohio State. After 5 weeks, have your thoughts changed any?
Not at all. That's going to be a tough-ass game. Mm-hmm. I mean, this Michigan team runs the ball well. I think by then, JJ will be throwing it a little better. we're going to assume, really, because you're giving assumptions to these teams based on what you see. Like, Ohio State's pass game is not very good. But I'm giving them an assumption that by that game, it will get righted. That ship will get righted, and it'll be one of the best in the country, because that's what we believe that they have in Columbus. It's just they haven't executed it yet. They haven't started hitting on all cylinders. And I think they will be by then. Right. And then it comes down to, all right, I don't think Michigan's secondary is great, but I don't think Ohio State's other corner's great, no matter who's in there, Jair Brown, any of them. So I think there's similar liabilities. I think they're pretty evenly matched teams.
Mm-hmm. There you go. David, thank you for the two.
I was waiting for this.
Who would win in a coach fight, Vrabel or Dan Campbell?
I don't know, but though the NFL, every other coach in the NFL is getting fucking destroyed by those two. That's all I guarantee you. And that goofy fucker at Miami is the first to go. I mean, he's going to get wiped out by a backhand. He's not even getting punched. I can't call it. I can't call it. Those are two bad asses. I mean, they just are. And I guess I'll have to go with Vrabel because that's my guy. But Dan Campbell ain't no fucking joke, man.
Mm-mm, no joke. In the Pac-12, Lincoln would hide behind a wall, watch them duke it out, and then sneak up behind the last guy and stab him in the back and win. Smiley face. Thanks, Chris, for the five. I love Chris, man. That's my guy. Big fan again. We're hitting all super chats. Jesus Christ, guys. What are we talking about? Bama? I forget what we were talking about when this popped up.
I don't know.
Best team in the country, we said. Doug, how healthy do you think the Bucs will be after the bye week? This has been the strangest season and offseason for injuries with Ohio State. I have no clue what the severity of any injury is. Like, no clue.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, some of these injuries are potential long-term. Potentially, it could be back after the bye. JSN, Cameron Brown. I mean, you're looking at it like they should be back after the bye week, but JSN's one tweak away from that being a season-ending injury. I'm just telling you it is. And his rehab's going great. I'm hopeful that it ends up, you know, being something in the rear view mirror. But right now, I'm not ready to say that it's not. So the bye week's going to help, right? But not for JSN. He's not doing shit right now anyways. He's had a bunch of bye weeks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ooh, I really like those up there. Andrew, thank you for the five. How much of Ohio State receivers improved so far this season?
A little bit, maybe. Go watch the Patreon breakdown if you're on there. I mean, I think they're blocking better. I think Julian's improved. I think Emeka's really good. Marv has beaten some inferior defenders, and you know they look great against zone coverage against Wisconsin. I think they're improving. I think they have talent, but it's not like it's been night and day. Like all of a sudden, it's like, oh, these are the receivers I expected. I mean, I still think they got a ways to go.
If you're a defensive coordinator or cornerbacks coach, how are you defending Ohio State's receivers?
I mean, right now I'm playing. If I got guys that are just good, they don't have to be great.
I'm talking about
good.
4 and 5 we're playing, star guys. You're in the
playing
top
press side. Man and load in the box, trying to stop this run game and make them beat man coverage. And I'm trying to flush CJ Stroud out of the pocket every chance I can get. I'm blitzing up internally. Fuck contain. He can break contain. He ain't gonna do shit with it. I'm gonna let him run around like crazy. I'm not gonna let him sit in the pocket. And I'm definitely pushing the middle of the pocket because he will not step up and make a big time throw and take a hit. Or I take that back. He hasn't yet. So I'm going to make him feel people in his lap the whole game and make him throw the ball all over the field.
Dabo and the family of hillbillies are a threat too.
They could become a threat. Maybe. I'm not ready to say that yet.
Andrew, again, thank you for the five. Between the D-line, linebackers, and O-line, rank these based on how much they've improved since last year, assuming we're talking about Ohio State.
Well, I mean, linebackers have to be number one. I mean, you have two guys that are playing like all conference players in a group that was atrociously bad. So mostly how far the place they came from to where they are is why the linebackers are one. I think the O-line is playing at a level like the linebackers, but they didn't come as far. They weren't as bad. I mean, the O-line wasn't great. The run game scheme was just okay. They still led the country in fucking everything. So they weren't terrible. I think we're mispersoneled. They could have been coached a little harder. And now we're seeing the results of those two things, getting personnel right, getting coached a little harder. So the O-line and linebackers are probably the top two position groups on the team as far as performance. But the linebackers came from by far the worst on the team.
No, I think it's pretty accurate. Nick, thank you for the five. Thoughts on Mayan being compared to Carlos Hyde? I feel like they're the same player.
Yeah, I mean, they're very similar. Carlos, they both run angry. I think Carlos had a little bit better top-end speed, but yeah, they're very similar running styles. big, physical, fucking mean dudes.
I love Carlos, and I think Carlos was the better back out of the two. I think Mayan has more make you miss than Carlos did, and that feels weird to say.
Probably. But
just kind of what I've been able to see. Brian, thank you for the five. Is there a link to the shop Manscaped through the channel? Hashtag Menace Army, by the way. Growth of the channel has been amazing. Brian, thank you so much. That honestly, like, that's what we
it
do
has for. Been amazing. And we're pushing. We want to blow this the fuck up. I mean, massive. Because we want this type of message out there in the mainstream college football media. So I appreciate it. There's no link. You just go to manscaped.com, and then when you buy whatever you want, and when you check out under promo code, put in Menace, you get 20% off the whole order and free shipping. And I'm telling you, this is like high quality stuff. This is not some cheap bullshit. This is nice ass fucking stuff.
Scott, thank you for the five. Thanks for today's sports talk therapy. The school system I work for had two staff members pass over the last 2 days, and this show's a good distraction. Scott, sending a lot of love and prayers. That's like something really difficult.
Prayers to you, man. That sucks.
Super hard to deal with. Losing someone at work, sometimes like you didn't realize how close or how much that person meant to you until after
it happened. You spent so much time with them.
Exactly. USC. Wow, this is our first USC fan we've had in the chat, Zach. Maybe. You said something about Caleb Williams, and they appeared. Mel Tucker's getting off light for the dumpster fire that Michigan State has become. Mel cannot get his team up for games now.
Yeah, listen, Mel, he's not getting off light. I agree. It's an absolute fucking dumpster fire. But the difference is he had a long way to build a program, and he had a flash in the pan success last year because he hit such a high success rate in the portal. He didn't hit that high this year, which is probably more common. And so those Band-Aid fixes aren't great Band-Aids, and they're bleeding through at places. So I don't want to say it's expected, because I was shocked at last year that he was able to hit the portal and all the Band-Aids stopped the bleeding. And all of a sudden this team was a pretty good football team. I didn't think that was possible, but he hit it at such a high success rate. I think that was fool's gold. You're not going to do that every year. And so he tried to do it again this year, and it's turning out that it's just not the case. So he's going to have to build that thing from the ground up as he tries to patch in these transfers as Band-Aids. But he's got to build the program. I mean, he doesn't get a pass. It is an absolute dumpster fire, and his team is not playing well at all.
The message is this shit isn't easy. Like getting to that elite level tier, like that shit's not easy, and it's difficult being elite. Zach, another Factor Cap. Thank you, Tony, for the two. Factor Cap, Zach goes back and coaches with Urban. Go grab it. I saw you looking for it. Go grab it.
Big cap. Big cap. Like, no chance in hell.
I knew that.
I mean, listen, he wouldn't hire me, and only because he would not want that media storm. But two, I would never fucking work for him again, ever.
If he does get hired, can we start a rumor that he reached out to hire you again?
Oh, yeah, okay, for sure. Cool.
We got it.
I'll even make fake texts.
Bill, thanks for the five. If Mickey Joseph at Nebraska shows good leadership and connection with the players, do you value those traits, or do you go outside the program for an X's and O's coach?
I mean, you value those traits. That's what they're looking for right now, right? Nebraska lost 800 games by like 6 points or less. They're looking for a coach that actually inspires players and doesn't have such a fucking ego where the players actually don't like him and don't want to play for him. That's what they need more than anything. But I think Nebraska has an opportunity here. So much support. I mean, statewide support. The amount of money they could raise in NIL donations for recruiting. I think Nebraska could pivot this new landscape of college football into national success, but they need the right coach. And I don't know that Mickey is it. But the good thing is he's got a resume to build right now. Show us that you're that guy. Turn this thing around right now.
Mickey's a really good football coach. I think he's one of the top five receiver coaches in college football at this point. And he's going to be up for a head coaching job at some point. It may not be this year, but it will be at some point in my opinion. Jay, thank you for the five. Love you guys. Hashtag Menace to Sports. Do you see CJ starting to be willing to run more, or is it just weak teams he's trying against?
Listen, I get this a lot, right? It's Rutgers, though. This is his resume. Never mind the team. Never mind the success they need. Never mind that those receivers need to achieve success. Like Marvin Harrison Jr. beat the corner and the safety on a deep over route. He needs that ball delivered so that he can elevate his game. Like, this is not about CJ being selfish. That's my issue with him. Not only does the team need him to step up and deliver a fucking strike when the pocket's collapsing, the team needs that. CJ needs that. NFL teams watch film. They will watch cut-ups. They will watch that Rutgers game and say, okay, so when we play the fucking Lions, he's not going to step up and deliver a ball and get hit. Ding, ding. All of a sudden, he's an 18th overall pick instead of the first overall pick. So he needs to do it selfishly as much as anybody needs him to do it. So I don't give a shit what the team is. He's got to just play quarterback. And guess what? He didn't do it against the big teams either.
I love CJ Stroud. Anyway, T Spiv, thanks for the five. How many sacks does CJ Stroud have this year? He has three, Zach. He's taking three sacks this year.
Three sacks. There you go. I have no idea.
Michael, thank you for the five. JTT has been quiet in the pass rush. Is that more the scheme benefiting the linebackers of the pass rush?
He doesn't play a ton. He doesn't play a ton. We're going to break. I got that film coming out today. Right after the show, I'm going to break down the Rutgers offense versus Ohio State defense. I mean, he plays. Don't get me wrong. He plays. But Zach Harrison, Jack Sawyer, obviously the linebackers, and even Javonte Jean-Baptiste are more productive pass rushers than JTT has been of late. And I think he's a really good player. He just kind of doesn't play as much.
Yeah, I agree. That's where I'm at. I also do think that the scheme does benefit the linebackers getting sacks. The battle royale. I figured it out later. My bad. I appreciate you though, my guy. Okay, a couple more, Zach, and let's get out of here. Ooh, this is an interesting one. Kyle McCord needs real game experience, not just running out the clock. Do you think he will start getting real playing time this season?
I mean, he got playing time. I know what you mean. In complete mop-up duty in four-minute offense, just trying to end the game. Yes, I think CJ should have been pulled earlier. I think Ryan was trying to make CJ battle through it because he was playing like dog shit. And it's like, why am I going to reward this kid and get him out when he played like dog shit and give him a break? Like he's the anointed savior and he gets to get pulled. But I agree. Like, for long-term success, Kyle McCord needs to operate the offense. And he did. I mean, he made, a throw or two in the Rutgers game. But yeah, I think he should have been out there a series or two earlier in that game. But I also would like to see Devin Brown. And maybe he's not there yet. I mean, either Devin Brown is not good enough or he needs to go on the field.
Yeah, no, I agree. JD, thank you for the five. Can you break down why Ibuka is top of your list of wide receivers from Ohio State based on games played this season? I agree, but I'm trying to prove a point to my friend.
Yeah, so I did it. I don't have the stats or all the analytics up in front of me, but we did an episode last week on the top five receivers in the Big Ten, and I broke down every reason you could ever want. But ultimately, he's one of the most productive receivers in the Big Ten. He's one of the most productive receivers versus man, zone, you name it. He doesn't drop the ball. He runs good routes. He's explosive. Like, I think he's a really, really good player.
He of all the receivers at Ohio State, he can do the most of what JSN can do. Like, he can emulate that better than anybody on the team. And he's bigger than the slot size would say. Because remember, people were trying to tell us that he was just a slot receiver. He tried to tell me he was an outside guy. But, here we are. Zach, I got nothing left for today, man. You killed it today. Anything else you want to hit before we get on out of here?
No, it's good. Go check out Manscaped. And also, if you're looking for, if you're a sports gambler, MyBookie, promo code Menace, free deposit match up to $1,000. And then the new one that I've used this year is so much fun, is for fantasy plays, is Prize Picks. You go to Prize Picks and you can do fantasy like combinations of different players that get more or less receptions or fantasy points or whatever. You can build them up to like $100 to win 800 easy. So go check out Prize Picks, same deal, promo code Menace, and you get a free deposit match. So they'll give you free money. So appreciate everybody. Go check out. Those are our three sponsors currently on Menace to Sports. And we had some big time phone calls and we're going to be joining a network here soon. We're just putting our show on a network. We're not joining anything. We are independent for life. But anyways, excited for where this platform's going. Appreciate you all. Be a friend. Tell a friend. Send somebody this video. Recruit some Army soldiers for us. Menace Army. I appreciate y'all. Menace out.